Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today I am with Marie Morris, also known as the Caffeinated Classroom over there on Instagram and YouTube. We are, you know, we're going to talk about how we can get students doing more by doing less. And this is going to be a fantastic episode for everyone listening because we all want to get deeper in our practices. We want our kids doing amazing things, but we don't want to sit here and stress ourselves out. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. So stick around, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a fantastic conversation.
Good morning, class.
So cool to be yourself in life and in your class.
Kids just want to be loved and they want to be noticed for who they are.
Students respond a lot better to kind, positive remarks.
The thing I really want my students to know is that I care.
Without a strong culture, nothing else was going to get done.
Teach Me Teacher is, I just want to call it a revolution. Alrighty, Marie, how are we doing today?
Oh my gosh. So great. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, you know,
good.
You know, one of my favorite things in the absolute world is, you know, when I started reaching out to people, people were like, oh, you know, what's Teach Me Teacher? You know, they didn't really know. And now that it's, you know, gotten an audience and there's people listening, I get to have on people that I follow and we kind of, you pay attention to the podcast. So it's a cool unification.
It's a neat, like, meeting of the minds, right?
Yes.
Where you're like, oh, wait. You know who I am? Like, that's where I was like, he knows who I am? Like, I'm just a nerdy English teacher. What?
That's the best kind.
I know, right?
super excited to have you on. It's a dreary day over here in Texas. The rain was coming sideways and super cold. I'm in my portable, so I'm ready to have a fantastic conversation about some good stuff. Now, for people who don't follow you, who don't know who you are, let's do a little bit of background about, you know, what you teach, all of that wonderful stuff, so people know who we are discussing today.
Okay. So, hi, I'm Marie. I am an English teacher in San Diego, California, and I am born and raised in San Diego. I stayed here for college, and I'm actually teaching back in the district where I grew up.
Nice.
So, yeah, so I have worked with quite a few of my own teachers, which is kind of funny. And now I'm getting to the point where, like, they're retired. But I used to run into people all the time, and I had that awkward, funny moment of, like, do I call you by your first name? Because I'm pretty sure you're just Coach McKinney. Like, I don't know that I can call you something else. But that has given me a really unique perspective being a teacher. I teach English. Okay, where do I start? So, teaching.
So it all started when I was born.
Well, it all started on December 9th, 1983. I like being able to teach where I grew up because I know the community. I know the kids. I was this kid, right? Yeah. To a certain extent. I know their experiences because of, at least geographically. Like, I know when they're talking about going, you know, to In-N-Out Burger, that is the same In-N-Out Burger that I went to when I was in high school. And we have that bit of a connection that served me a little bit better when I was in my younger 20s than now, because I was closer to their age. But there's that community aspect to it. And it's part of what I just love about education. But I started as an English teacher, got my credential in English. My first big girl job is at the exact same school where I am teaching right now. And I taught English. Oh my gosh, I've actually already lost track of my own teaching career. So I'm in year 12. I taught English full time for 2 years, but I started teaching in the 07-08 school year. So, like, budget cuts were crazy in California.
Yeah.
And I didn't even get pink slips because I was temporary. So I would just get, like, please don't let the door hit you. Thank you for your service kind of, like, notices. And by the skin of my teeth and by some really wonderful administrators, I kept getting rehired because basically I would get let go and then rehired and then let go and then rehired. And the way that things worked out, I had, like, 1 year that I was part-time and then there just wasn't a job for me the next year. So I ended up getting a master's degree. So I've been in and out of the classroom a couple of times. And my master's was in theater. So then when I went back into the classroom, I was the theater teacher and I ran my school's theater department. And that was for 5 years. Then I went back out of the classroom for a couple of years and I didn't stop teaching. schools within my district. And I did, with a whole team of us tenured teachers, we were piloting like a learning wheel model that they're still doing now, even though my 2-year tenure was up with that program. And we do like visual and performing arts. We would do STEM lessons. We taught coding, which is funny if you know me to be like, really? You're coding, huh? That's interesting. Yeah. And then now I am, that was the last 2 years, and I am now this year back at the school where I began and back in the English classroom where I began, and nothing looks the same as it did before. I'm a little older. I'm a little wiser. I have a lot more experience, and I've changed almost entirely the way that I teach.
That's awesome. You know, I've had so many people on the podcast who have taught where, you know, the community they grew up in, and including myself. You know, I'm in the, you know, Colby Sharp teaches at the campus where he went to school, and I think his wife went to school, and his kids now go. And yeah, and then, you know, that whole thing about working with people, you know, I've worked with almost all of my old teachers, you know, in some form or fashion. And, you know, the last 3 principals I had were my teachers. So yeah, and it really does create like this dynamic, right? Of, oh, we're colleagues now. You know, I totally still call them by their last name, you know.
You don't have to. It's just too weird. Yeah, no, totally.
That's why, you know, I would tell my students, I'm like, you know, we might work together one day. And they're like, ah. I'm like, I don't know. I was a turn in high school, and I would have never guessed that I've taken this turn. And now look at me, so.
I know, telling students, like, you do know that one day you'll be a mature adult. And they look at you like, lady, what are you talking about? Like, I have 3 eyes. You know what I mean? Yep. Like I'm saying the most insane thing in the world, but I'm like, no, I was a young fool as well. One day you will grow up to be just like me. And I look at you.
Yes. And it's, I love the legacy of teaching in a lot of ways, but you know, I'm interested though. So you know, you've been through all of these different things. So how did those experiences going through all of that and then coming back to LA, how did that shape the way you looked at your classroom when you returned?
I will say there are two events in my life that really completely changed the way that I look at my interactions and my role as an educator. I mean, when I say that it's completely different, if you talk to my colleagues, they'd be like, nope, she's just as loud. And she's just as, you know, I experiment a lot with different types of lessons. Like I am that way. My spirit is the same. But when I became a mom, it changed the way that I saw my students. There was no longer, when I started teaching, I was 22 and I was in the same generation as my students. And at 22 years old, I taught 18-year-old seniors. And like, looking back at that, I'm like, what? Like, I looked just like them. Like there was no, you know, like I could have passed for a senior. Getting a little bit older and my role going from that grew me up real quick, becoming a mom and growing into becoming a mom. And then when I left the high school classroom and for the last 2 years spent my time in TK, like transitional kindergarten is what we have. So it's that year before kindergarten, the kids have half days. We have that in our district through 5th grade classrooms. And I hadn't been in one of those classrooms since I was a 5th grader. It really, well, it threw me for a loop. I sat there going, oh, I was a camp counselor. I've been a teacher. I can totally do this. And I was a little too big for my britches. And I was actually fine in the primary grades, TK, K1, good to go. Put me in a 4th or 5th grade classroom and I was a fish out of water. And there were huge growing experiences for me. Cause like the way that I used to connect with my students was in like, I would find what we had in common, especially when we were, you know, 5 years apart in age, I would find commonalities. And that's where a lot of my classroom management came from. That's where a lot of my like finding texts to work on with my students in my English classroom. And even in my drama classroom, I could find those connections and those moments. And then all of a sudden, I was in my 30s and I was a mom and they saw me as a mom in my, well, at that point, teenagers have no idea how old you are. They just know that you're old, right? And that connection was lost. And I went, oh my gosh, it's like I lost a limb. Like I didn't know what I was doing anymore. And going into the elementary classroom, I was forced to be really, really good at classroom management. I was forced to really develop these skills, and it was trial by fire. And I was so lucky to have colleagues around me. We did a lot of co-teaching under this like wheel model.
Mm-hmm.
Making sense. But I was able to see their experience, and I remember stopping myself and being like, okay, I can either be completely miserable for the next 2 years because I don't know what I'm doing, or I can just learn how to do this and be receptive to the amazing educators around me and just see what they're doing. Not be thinking to myself, well, here's how I would do that. What I'm doing isn't working. How are they doing that? Okay, I need to model a little bit of that. And once I get that under my belt, then I can make it my own. You know?
Yes.
And that shift in age and in like status of life, being, you know, single to being married and having a child, so that I was so different from my students, and then really taking in what the other educators around me were doing and saying, oh, wow, this is phenomenal. How did I not take this in before? Because I was so in my own little box.
Yeah.
Shifted my whole mindset. And it shifted the way that I see students of any age. It shifted the way that I think about my responsibility for their education. Yeah.
You know, I love that reflection piece so much. I mean, I still feel like I'm in touch with, you know, my kids on certain levels. You know, what really helps me is I'm a gamer, so that, you know, I get boys in here who are like obsessed with Fortnite. I'm like, dude, I'll beat you.
They start talking to me about Fortnite. I'm like, oh, 2 weeks? Are we talking Shakespeare?
There you go.
Cool. I'm all in. They look like Mrs. Moore. They do that like, mom, you're embarrassing us. It's so funny.
Right? But no, still like that, you know, the piece that you said about watching other teachers and stuff, you know, it's why I think podcasts like this one is so powerful for people to listen to, but it's also just being able to experience people who are doing things different, because you don't even take everything from everyone, right? It's like, you know, I really loved like their quiet signal. You know, it took me like half my first year of teaching to realize I needed a freaking quiet signal.
I have no voice by Wednesday, and I am barely crawling to my car Friday afternoon because I'm so exhausted.
Yeah.
Because my classroom management is less management and more me talking over them, right?
Yes.
I think we all have that moment, yeah.
Well, and it's also, you know, I'm a fairly, you know, I have a lot of energy. I drink a lot of coffee and stuff, and I know that's why we're twinsies. No, but and I use a lot of that to control part of the class, but it doesn't matter how much energy you have. Like, you got to have classroom management pieces.
You can rely so much on your own personality, because there will be the day that you're sick or the day that you had like, you know, a flat tire that morning, and you're just off your game. And then to your point, if you don't have those skills in your pocket to fall back on, you're just setting yourself up for a lot of heartache.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever shared this story before. You just reminded me of it. But like the whole, you know, my classrooms were okay. You know, if anyone who worked with me, they were shaking their head like, no, they weren't. But they were, it was pretty rough. But when I was absent one day, you know, the story that teachers still go at me for is, you know, I had a sub note where like four kids jumped out of the back window of my portable and like left, and like, I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I was like, oh my God, like that, you know, that's what it was. That was reality. But
please know you're not alone. I have had the same thing happen multiple times, probably later in my career than they should have.
Well, and that's the case. So, you know, I've gotten a lot of emails recently from new teachers listening, or people that are in college, you know, becoming teachers. And, you know, just know that, you know, we talk a lot of positives about teaching right now because we've been doing it, but you got to pay your dues, and, you know, things are going to happen, and it just takes time.
Absolutely. And like, if I look back to who I was, I have always had a passion for connecting with kids. Like, that is my life. My two dreams in life were to be a mom and to be a teacher. And look at me, right? Yay, I've achieved my dreams. And now I have to sustain them and like figure out how to keep enjoying them. But if
so
I look
now
back,
that I have like, this, what do I do now?
I've done it. What do I do? But I love it. And not every day is easy, as we all know. I look back to my first year teaching, my first year's teaching, and I felt like I had a lot to prove. And I think I did have a lot to prove, as in my early 20s, and I was this young thing
like just all voice, and I wore high heels so I looked different from my students. And like you said, like I used my voice, it worked for a minute, but I was afraid to ask for help. I felt like I would show weakness. I felt like I would be judged. Like whether or not this is actually accurate to what was happening, that was my like interpretation of my experience, is that as a new teacher, you have to figure it out for yourself. You have to, if you ask for help, it better be the right question. Otherwise, somebody's gonna think you don't know what you're doing, and therefore you, and I did a lot of like just closing my classroom door, and I regret it so much. It took me maturing a bit, and then also just being okay with not doing everything. I was also that A student all through my academic career. So then if I felt like I was failing at any point in time, I like couldn't handle it. So I had to fix it, and nobody else could know that I was failing. And it was really, really hard. And I think I made it harder on myself than it needed to be. So like to your point, podcasts, YouTube videos, even Twitter, Instagram, all these different places where newer teachers and veteran teachers can connect with each other and open their classroom door to a certain extent it's just so powerful and like community building. And like, I got so much more confidence in my teaching practice in the past 8 months, 10 months of being on like teacher social media, because you're able to connect with people in a way that's non-threatening. Sometimes, even though some of my best friends work at my school and we have been friends and I know their children and they know my children and our children will grow up together, there's still sometimes things you aren't that comfortable sharing with the people closest to you.
Yep.
Right? Because when it really comes down to it, if a budget cut comes around or like something has to happen, you're going to be in competition for jobs. Like and that's a horrible part of, we don't think of education as a business, but it is a multi-billion dollar business and we are in it.
There's so many good things there. but the main thing, and I think we talked about this on Mr. D's podcast, but the idea of, I think every teacher should story on Instagram at least a little bit. And here's why, or post it somewhere, because when you go, when I think about posting something from my classroom or something that I'm doing, I'm instantly going, okay, so is this good enough to post? Does this look right? But so you're forcing yourself to reflect, because you're not going to put out trash.
My teaching practice has elevated exponentially from knowing that a few thousand people are going to potentially see what I'm doing with students and question what I'm doing with students. Therefore, I'm going to question, am I doing my best? And you're darn tootin', I'm going to try to do my best if that's what I'm going to put out to share with other people. You're absolutely right. It becomes automatically reflective.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's like one of the hardest parts, right, of being a new teacher, and you go through like the induction and like clearing your credential and all of that. Reflective practice. And you're like, that's all I do. And then you get to a certain point in your career where you're like, I should probably think about how I did that. This forces us back into that new teacher part of reflection where it's constant. Yeah.
Well, and my role is, I still teach a class, but I'm a literacy coach this year. So I'm in, part of my responsibility is helping teachers be the teacher that they want to be. I'm not walking into spaces and say, do this. I'm saying, all right, what do you want to do? And how do I help you do that? And
that's so cool.
Well, in my own space. So, one of the things that, we've talked about some things that, they want to work on and whatnot. And in my own room, I've decided to focus on those things so I can work out how it works in at least my space and go, hey, so this is what I'm doing. What could you take from this to, do point A, point B, point C? But it's completely changed how I taught this year. Like last year, I was pretty much just trying to channel Ron Clark, but and Hope King and all them. But
not a bad thing.
But this year it's so much more, there's such a deepness to why I'm doing things that I don't know. I'm just in a constant state of reflection, and it stresses me out just a little bit, but it also like I've just in the past few weeks, I've just become such a better teacher because I'm forced to constantly reflect on the why I'm doing something.
Well, and I think it gives you so much professional confidence.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, we're in a position, like as high school teachers especially, we're in a position where actually any age of educator that you're this, oh my gosh, any age of student who you are educating, you're in an interesting spot because while you are a professional educator, you're working all day with kids. And so there's some breaking down of maybe the language that you're using to be able to connect or like whatever it is a profession that can appear unprofessional.
Yep.
Right? You're playing games with kids. That doesn't seem like suit and tie in the office sort of behavior.
Right.
But if you are, like you're saying, questioning the why and reflecting upon what is it that I am doing for students in this moment and what am I doing to better my own teaching practice through whatever this activity is, then heck yeah, you're a professional and you're doing your best and it's best practice. But it's a lot of like being able to confidently say, I know that what I am doing is right. There are so many ways to do everything.
Yep.
Say this is right for me. Like being able, I think that's so impactful that you can go and try something out in your classroom and you have at least enough confidence and like experience under your belt that you can say, okay, I'm going to try this out today for the better of somebody else. And my students are still going to get something out of it.
Yep.
Right. Like, you kind of both.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the keys. So we were having a really interesting conversation. We've been doing a book study over 180 days by Penny Kittle and Kelly Gallagher with our teachers here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they, you know, Kittle is very much, you know, she doesn't do whole novel all the time. In that podcast, she talks about she goes back and forth on mm-hmm. if she wants to do whole group novels or not. And Kelly, you know, he has like a few novels that he does. You know, he teaches 1984 to his seniors every year. But, mm-hmm. You know, I had a teacher, she was doing a whole group novel with her sixth graders. And she goes, she was talking about, yeah, you know, she was like, I know it's, you know, it's not best practice. My kids are loving it. I'm like, no, I was like, it's working for you. I was like, there's tons of ways to do things just because insert big name here or me personally, like just because we might not do that is if it's working, then it's good.
Absolutely. If there's anything that I've learned about, so like this whole thing with starting the caffeinated classroom, I've started to dive into small business mm-hmm. just to make sure, like if I'm building some sort of a brand, I want to make sure that I'm not going to be like accidentally committing tax fraud or something weird, right?
Yep.
And as you get on social media and you start connecting with people, like sponsorships and that sort of stuff come around. So I've been diving into the small business world. And because I've been in education my entire life, like most of us have, we are most of us lifelong career educators, right?
Mm-hmm.
The business world is so bonkers to me. Like, knowing that there are so many different ways to do something and that each company defines it for itself and each company has their own like language and speak, and then going, oh my gosh, we can totally apply that to our classrooms.
Yep.
Like we're totally the CEO of our own classroom and we are just making systems that operate and function. And I guess our employees are teenagers in my case, and you're trying to make sure that everybody's operating at full capacity. I don't know. I'm losing my metaphor here, but nobody knows what they're doing in the world as adults. Like you see those letterboard. I mean, I'm not sure how active you are on Pinterest. I am quite. But like a lot of things on my feed are like letterboard quotes. And it's like, welcome to adulthood. Spoiler alert. No one knows what they're doing. And that's what I tell my students all the time. Like, we don't really, there's no one way to do anything. You just get more comfortable with not knowing and you become confident in that what you're doing is working.
Yeah. Oh my God. So we just, today, one of my students, you know, in writer's workshop, they're writing it's a super cool lesson that I put together, but they're writing a picture essay, but they're combining the genre of a procedural text. So they're combining these two. Yeah.
And tell me more.
it's super cool. And the idea was, I didn't want them to write, you know, recipes or how to's necessarily,
right.
But
well, you're like, okay, wah-wah.
Yeah. So I created this rubric that was based on, so if you were going to give someone instructions on how to be you, what would you focus on and how could you use images to help you push this? You know, so it's like, first you need to, you know, do this or whatever, uh-huh. but then you describe that and have the image that connects to it. And
so it's like a DIY tutorial as to do something quite complex.
Yes, basically, you know, how to be them, but then so it kind of connects to the narrative piece a little bit and telling your story, but it's also, you know, we're practicing procedural writing, we're doing all this, super fun.
Really cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. And kids, they've been really connecting to it. Like, I have this girl, she comes in, she has like this big, her hair is like super big and poofy and curly. And I had her free write for a little bit. She was like, I don't know what I want to write about. So I said, all right, why don't you just free write? And so she free wrote and she kept on writing about her hair. And I said, I was like, how often do people talk about your hair? And she goes, everybody. So I was like, it's like I'm you, sure. right? It's like your identity. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, what if you did like your procedural, you know, and I'm just giving you an idea, but I was like, what if you connected your hair to this? She goes, oh, she was like, I could talk about how, you know, how taking care of my hair is like how I manage my life and how like I walk with chaos with me, but it's controlled chaos. And I was like, yes.
Oh yes. My gosh. And you're like, this is the best teaching moment. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I had a kid. Today he was struggling though, right? So there's a success. Now I had another kid that was struggling a little bit and he goes, I go, look at mine. You know, I always model and try to write what I want them to write. And I was like, look at mine. And he goes, I don't want to look at yours. And I go, why? And he goes, it's easy for you. And I was like, no, I was like, it took me, I was like, I invented like this little combination. I was like, I had to really think about this. And we just had a real conversation. I was like, dude, every time I sit down and write, it's just as hard for me as it was when, you know, I might have more tools and I'm more well read, but it is just as challenging to do it as an adult. And, you know, I think a lot, and then he started working because he was like, oh, okay. But, you know, well, it connects to your point of, you know, we as teachers, you know, we have to be honest about like, our struggles and modeling, I've quit like 7 books these last like 5 weeks. Cause I'm just not connecting to anything right now.
Oh, it's not going to happen. No, I get that. And then it's funny that you say this, not like ha ha funny, but like coincidental. The lesson that I gave today was a connection to something that we did yesterday, but basically students were asked to have conversations with each other. And it's an exercise called Human Library that one of my colleagues at my school came up with. And the exercise is in helping students with the art of conversation. And it's less about talking and it's more about listening. And so we do a lot of like, I said, I don't care what you tell your partner, what story it is. I don't care what you talk about. Like, I will not walk up and listen to your conversations, go off topic. There is no topic. The whole point is that you are practicing active, respectful listening and that you're connecting with another person. And like, I told them all the reasons behind why we're doing this. Like, we're going to do a Socratic seminar. This way you'll be able to actually talk about your thoughts because you will have connected with other people in the room, blah, 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 blah. And there is a boy in my class who it's my first period. He is a junior in a sophomore class. So he has not found success in this class in the past. And he has a hard time getting to school on time. He is late most days. He at least 10 or 15 minutes late. And it's just one of those things where it's like, if you come in and you get to work, we will figure, you know, we will make up points that you've lost. Like, I'm just willing to work with this kiddo. He's got kind of a hard home life right now. And I know, I think, a very small fraction of his story. And he normally doesn't really talk to anybody. He puts on his hood and just kind of puts his head down and like when I'm talking. And then, you know, because he wants to be respectful, but he also really wants no one to look at him. And today I watched him light up and like come to life. And I did a lot of like front loading for students. Like, listen, once again, I am not listening to your conversations. There is no pressure here other than to be present. Like, all I'm expecting of you is that you're present and you're connecting with another person. Like, that's it. And like your student who said, I don't think this comes easy to you. Like, I always have to say, I'm a talker. Like, I get it. I'm a theater major. I'm a drama teacher. Like, this is what I do. My life is performing for you. Like, my bread and butter is public speaking. Do not compare yourself to me.
Yeah.
Compare yourself only to your own need for growth. Right. He came to life and like, I actually taught. So he talked to 4 different people, told them stories, listened to their stories, got this really quiet girl who has trouble with the English language. It is her second language, and she just has trouble sometimes understanding it and then speaking. He got her to open up. I heard her laugh for the first time in, I mean, it's been
17, 18 weeks, something like that. Like, it was just really, really cool. I think I'm getting off topic, but I got to talk to him after the fact and I said, can you wait for a second, kiddo? Come here. I need you to know how proud I am of you. And he looked at me like, he was like, for what? And I said, I have not heard your voice or seen your face as much as I did today. And you got this girl to open up. I've never heard her laugh before. Most of the room has never heard her laugh before. You did that. And he was like, what? And I said, I feel like you really enjoyed that today, did you? And he's like, yeah. And I said, were you nervous? He goes, oh yeah, I hate talking to people. And I was like, but do you? Because you smiled the whole time. And this happened for like an hour. And it was just cool. It was one of those moments, right? Where you get to like see them struggling at first. And he has had a hard time. We do a lot of conversation in our class. He never contributes. And then today, like, boom, there he is. And he's talking to other people. And like, I can't really take credit for it. I think he just came ready to party and like brought it and had that moment of like, he just did it without being, it was really cool.
One, I love your activity. You know, I was following you on your story today, and I just love this idea of preparing students for something like Socratic Seminar, which I should do a podcast on now that I think about it, because I think a lot of people don't know what those are, or like Socratic Smackdown, and it's awesome.
I think they're kind of, sorry, they're intimidating. I've never done one with my classes.
This is your first one? First.
Yes.
Sweet.
It's happening in a couple of weeks, and I sat there going, I need to start preparing them emotionally now and academically next week.
Yeah.
So that they can like have a good conversation.
Well, that's okay. So people need to take that. They need to write that down right now, is, you know, you preparing them, you know, academically and emotionally, you know, taking time for both, because we, you know, I've seen teachers who they really want that conversation. I've been that teacher. I love conversation. Sure. I think conversation is where you hear kids learning. You hear what they actually, what's actually going on in their head. Writing can do the same thing, but you get different things with writing and speech.
Right.
But, you know, having that time, just having kids just talk to each other. I mean, one, it's hilarious because who does that? Like, you know, even when we go out to dinner with family, you know, we have our phones out, we're looking at stuff.
Right. Do you know what's crazy? Okay. So we're a school where you can set your own policy in your classroom mm-hmm. for cell phones. It has evolved to that. And I have to tell students every single day to put their phones down, but it's in my syllabus. Like, in this class, one of the skills that you will practice is maturity with technology. These phones are not going anywhere. It's almost 2019. Our students are going to have technology with them and connection all the time, and they need to learn now how to not lose a job, you know, because of like texting. So I battle that every day, and it's something that I've willingly stepped into. I didn't have a single cell phone come out. I had one cell phone come out and he said, is it okay if I show my partner a picture of what I'm talking about? And I was like, heck yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for asking. Like, you're awesome. And we talked about, you know, like how you show somebody respect and how the actions that we are like our own behaviors, however unwittingly, what it communicates to other people. So I said, for instance, this is like before we went into the other room, we went into our school's multipurpose room to like remove from our like current location and just get something new for these conversations today. And I was saying to them before we left the classroom, if I was sitting here and I was talking to you and I had a girl that I know pretty well stand up, like, and I put in a headphone, even if I have one earbud in and the music is not on, what does that communicate to her?
Yep.
I was like, but you're not listening. Da-da-da-da-da. I said, I hate to tell you guys, it communicates something a little worse. It communicates truly that she is not important enough for my attention. Not just that I'm not paying attention, but that her moment is not important enough for me to engage fully. Like, it's just not. And they looked at me and I said, do I think that any one of you in this room is intentionally telling somebody they're not important by when you look at your watch or when you check your phone? No, I do not think that you are ill, you know, you mean ill will, but your intention doesn't really matter at that moment. It's just about how you affect that person. And so that, I guess, worked, because not a single one. And when we came back to the classroom afterwards, because we have 90-minute periods, so I have a lot of time for stuff like this in a class day, their debrief was, I didn't even think about looking at my phone. I was so interested in our conversation. I mean, you know, and it's, a few kids had a less positive vibe because they were like, I haven't talked that much in so long. My mouth is dry, whatever. But the hearing, I didn't even think about looking at my phone from a 15-year-old in the year 2018, I was like, drop the mic. I'm out. I've peaked. No longer go on. I have nothing more to teach you, children. I'm done.
That's awesome. No. Well, and this really goes cool. to, you know, we haven't asked any of the points that we thought about, but it all connects to this. No, you're good, because this is, by the way, for people listening, this is literally how Teach Me Teacher goes. Like, you know, I send questions or like talking points, and then we just talk about whatever, you know, it's just, it is what it is. But yeah, like it really does happen like that most of the time, but we are on topic because you did so much by doing less today, right? I mean, you hit on so many social skills, you hit on soft skills that need to happen, you hit on things, you're building up to a complicated structure that you've never done before.
I know. Kids don't know that, by the way.
That's good. But this idea of doing, you know, having kids do more for less, I mean, this is literally what that is, right?
Absolutely.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you could do me a solid, I need you all to go follow the Caffeinated Class. That's what Marie calls herself over there on Instagram. So go follow her over there. She posts wonderful things. Her stories are always insightful. She's very honest in those things. Exactly what we want when we're watching people over there on Instagram. That's the whole point. So if you haven't made the jump to the Instagram, you know, the whole reason I do it isn't really for the social media aspect. It's just because it's the one place we get to watch teachers talk and they share their stories and they do all this wonderful stuff and you get to see real teachers in real classrooms, just like the podcast. So it's wonderful to be over there. Go follow her at the Caffeinated Class and check her out on YouTube at the Caffeinated Classroom. And both are amazing. Both are super insightful. I know you'll get something out of it because I get something out of it, just like I got tons out of this conversation. You know, this was one of those conversations to where it just came out so natural. Marie, she teaches the same content as me, so we had a lot to go off there, but it just gelled well. I think you guys can hear that. Some conversations just roll better than others, and this was one of those. There is another full-length episode coming next Monday. It's probably going to be around the 40-minute mark because we talked for a little longer than normal, which is why this one was a little longer than normal. And I absolutely love those. You know, you guys, we've had episodes that have gone an hour and 30 minutes and all this wonderful stuff. So I am no stranger to those. I know we try to keep them a little short, but the conversation is just so wonderful. I didn't want to cut any of that material out. So be looking forward to that next Monday. In the meantime, if you enjoy this episode, please go over there to iTunes, Google Play, wherever you're listening to this. Hit that star button. Every time you hit those star buttons over there on iTunes, it lets other educators know that this is a legit podcast, that it is something that can be useful for them. So if you are enjoying it, if you enjoyed this episode, if it's your first time listening or your 100th time listening, does not matter. Go hit that star button. It helps people discover the show, so make sure, if you want to support the show, that is the best way, other than sharing the episodes with your fellow teachers and staff at your campus. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, go to teachteacherpodcast.com where you can go through the backlog. You can hit on the different seasons if you want to go back all the way at the beginning when I first started the podcast, or just find the wonderful episodes that appeal to you. We've done so many episodes at this point that there's guaranteed to be several that connect to you, your content, or your needs currently in your own professional development desires. And
just as a small connection, make sure to go follow Teach Me Teacher on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. Facebook is definitely kind of the hub of Teach Me Teacher. That's the actual podcast's page. We have about 38,000 educators over there in that, so we're sharing pictures and videos and stuff like that. Instagram is more of my personal look. It's still Teach Me Teacher, but you still get to see, I'll talk about classroom, or I'll talk about professional development, or I'll talk about whatever it is, you know, really connected to education. So follow me over there on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter if you would like to step in and really be a part of the wonderful community. If you like this episode or like any other episode, feel free to reach out. I love talking to the people who are fans of the podcast. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.